Good evening, everyone. It's a great pleasure for me to be here in Kilat Nitzanim and to be able to spend an hour tonight learning together about truth, pluralism, halacha, and hopefully, you know, how we relate to those who we disagree with. One thing is very clear, that anyone who has had any exposure to Torah learning is aware that everything's a machloket. There's always different opinions about everything. Obviously, there are basics. There aren't two different opinions in the world of Torah scholarship as to whether or not we should eat pork, or whether we should go to the office on Shabbos or rest on Shabbos. But when it comes to all the details of halacha, there's machloket in the Mishnah, machloket in the Gemara, and machloket in the Rishonim and Achronim down to this very day. Any question that you're likely to be perplexed about, you will find that contemporary rabbis have differing opinions about. So what are we to make of all these different opinions? So before we ask some questions, let's see what Chazal have to say about this. And I think we're all familiar with a catchphrase that's found in the Gemara about differences of opinion between rabbinic decisors. If you look in Makor number 1 here, Amar Rabbi Avraham Amar Shmuel, a very famous passage, Shalosh Shanim Nechleku Beit Shammai Beit Hillel. For 3 years, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel argued. Right? We know that if we had to pick from the history of the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara, two schools of thought were always at odds with each other, we would likely choose Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, who disagreed about pretty much everything. From the details of various obscure halachot to basic perspectives on life. They argued for 3 years. Halalu omer halacha kmotenu, v'halalu omer halacha kmotenu. Halalu, these said, the halach is like us, and these said, the halach is like us. So what happened? Yatza bat kol v'yamra, a heavenly voice rang out and said, Eile ve'eile divrei Elokim chayim. These and these are the words of the living God. Meaning, they're both the words of Hashem. They're both words of Torah. V'halacha k'beit Hillel. Okay, we have to paskin the halacha somehow. The halacha follows Beit Hillel, but even though the halacha follows Beit Hillel, both of them are the words of Hashem. Both of them are holy words of Torah. We find a similar idea fleshed out a little more in Makor number 2, without this catchphrase, but with this idea. Balea Supot, the Gemara in the beginning of Chagiga, darshins a pasuk from Sefer Kohelet, which is talking about, you know, wise men. Ba'alei asupot, elu talmidei chachamim. Asupot, milashon asifa, something to do with gatherings. These are Torah scholars. Sheyoshven asupot, asupot, oskim batorah. They sit in different groups and learn Torah, in different schools of thought. Halolo metamim, halolo metarin. These say tamim, and these say Torah. They argue. There are different schools with different opinions. Halolo osman, halolo matirin. These say osir, these say mutter. Halolo posam, halolo machshirin. These say it's no good, pasol, and these say it's okay, it's kasher. Shema Yomar Adam, lest the person might say, Hey, achani lamei Torah me'ata, how can I learn Torah then? Someone might easily say, like, if everything's machloket, they're just different opinions, then what am I supposed to be learning? Right, I might as well give up. Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk, comes to teach us, Kulam nitnu me'ro'echa, they were all given by one shepherd. Shepherd meaning divine shepherd. Kelachad netanan, parnesa chad amran, v'pia don kol masim baruchu. One God said them, and one leader, one supporter, Hashem, spoke them, and they're from their all words are from the mouth of the master of all deeds. As it says in the intro to the revelation of Har Sinai, right before Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Vayidaber Elokim et kol hadvarim ha'ela. There's obviously an extra word in the pasuk that needs to be darshened. Could have just said God spoke these words. We know what the words are. They're written. Why say kol all these words? All these words means not only one opinion, but both opinions are from Hashem. Avata esek aznecha kafir chesed, even you should make your ear like, I think this means a hopper, something you put the wheat in as part of the milling process in the old days. It's something which you put a lot of things into, right? You open it up wide to receive all the opinions. Uknei lecha lev mevin l'shmoa divreyam tamim et divreyam atarin et divreyam osim et divreyam atirin et divrey poslim et divreyam achshirim. Get an understanding heart and listen and understand the words of both sides. Aser, mutter, kasher, pasol, the tahor, tamei. Right? The Chazal acknowledged that it could sometimes be confusing, even frustrating, to hear different opinions about everything, right? Every once in a while you meet someone who's like, you know, I became Baal Tshuva because, there were no answers out there in the secular world. And everything was very complex, and no one knew anything. So I decided to study Torah, so there would be a clear answer to everything. And I start learning the halachas, and there's no clear answer to anything. What are you supposed to do? So the Gemara says, yeah, I know that's a little surprising, but just learn all of the opinions, because they all come from Hashem. Okay, clear vote of confidence in the value of learning the different opinions and the value of the different conflicting opinions. Before we analyze that, let's see one more Gemara where they use this phrase of Elo ve'elo jivilkem chayim heim. Dichtiv v'tizna alav pileg sho. Chazal are darshaning here the sad story of Pilegesh Begavat, the end of Sefer Shoftim. We're not going to go into that story. But they interpret this pasuk as meaning not that the man's concubine betrayed him adulterously, but that she disappointed him in something about her household comportment. Rabbi Yatar Omer Zvov Matzala, Rabbi Yonatan Omer Nima Matzala. Rabbi Yatar said he found a fly in his food and therefore he's very upset at her. And Rabbi Yonatan Omer, he found a hair. Okay, according to one interpretation later, he found a hair in his food. So he's very upset at her. And they argued. Va'ashke Rabbi Yatar Leliyahu. Rabbi Yatar found Eliyahu Anavi, who's one of the people who argued. Amalei, my covenant Kadosh Baruch Hu. What's Hashem doing? Right? What does he mean, what's Hashem doing? He knows what Hashem's doing. He's a yeshivisha feller. What's Hashem doing? He's learning. Just he didn't know what sugya Hashem was up to. So what sugya is Hashem up to? So Amarle, he said to him, Asik Pilegesh Begiva. He's up to in Sefer Shoftim, the story of Pilegesh Begiva. Okay, so I guess nowadays they wouldn't consider Hashem yeshivish because he was learning Tanakh instead of Gemara. But okay, he was up to Pilegesh Begiva. So Rabbi Aviatar said, great. So I want to know which of us was right about why the fellow was mad. Was it the fly or the hare? Well, my karma, what does he say? Amarle Aviatar b'ni kachu omer, Yonatan b'ni kachu omer. Yeah, my son Rabbi Yatar says this pshat, and Rabbi Yonathan says this pshat. Hashem learned both pshatim. Amrli said to Yonavi, Chas v'shalom, can't be. Mikas feka kamishmaya. How could Hashem be in there? How could Hashem not know? Hashem knows the answer, right? He lived forever. He knows everything. He knows exactly what happened. Why is he saying both opinions? So Amrli, Eilav Eilav Jivilkem Chayim. Both of your opinions are the words of Hashem. Zvuv matzav alovikpid, nima matzav hikpid. Actually, both of them happened. He found a fly, and he found a hare, and the first one, he was not as upset about it, and the second time, he got even more upset. Okay, so they were both right. You know, in the story, there could be more than one fact. You know, people argue, I don't know, like, what caused the Civil War? There are different theories. There could be more than one right answer, right? What caused him to be upset at his Pilegesh? There could be more than one right answer, no problem. Okay, we'll leave the details for now. This is an application, number three, of Elu Ve'elu Jevelu Elokim Chaim to the world of Agadah, of interpreting stories. Now, here's the problem. Is it easier to acknowledge the truth of two opinions when it comes to interpreting a story or when it comes to paskening halacha, deciding the halacha? What?
Good question.
Okay, what do you think? The story. The story is easy because there could have been two things that happened in the story, right? I say this happened, you say that happened, they could have both happened. You know, that's not so difficult. You know, there's an argument. Why was Yitzhak blind? Was he blind because the angels cried at the time of the Akedah? And it went into his eyes? Was he blind because Esav's wives burned incense to their idols and it went into his eyes? Or was he blind so that Yaakov could steal the brachot? The answer, it could be all of them. It could be more than one reason. A lot of things could have happened in the story. It's not so hard to say both opinions are right when it comes to stories. That's not so tricky. What's tricky is the first two makorot. When it comes to the halacha, either something's usur or it's mutter. Like to this very day, you know, we don't even have to get into hot button issues. Big political issues of our time. Even everyday halachic issues, right? Does the meat have to be glock? If the meat's not glock kosher, is it kosher or treif? So some people say it's mutter, and some people say it's usser. You know, if there is milk that was sold by the regular non-Jews in America regulated by the FDA, is that not Chol Yisrael? Is it kosher or not? So Rabbi Moshe Feinstein says it's mutter, and Yaakov Reich said it was usser. So either it's usser or mut, either it's kosher or treif. Like, it can't be kosher and treif simultaneously. The definition of kosher is that it's not treif. Definition of treif is that it's not kosher. So how can they both be right? That gets a little trickier. And that's why I want to explore some of what the Mefarshim have to say about this philosophically as to what it means that both opinions are right, in what way, in what sense both opinions are true, and what that means about the nature of our search for truth. So let's start with number four, is the Petach Einayim, the Petach Einayim is a book of commentary on the Agadot, the stories of the Gemara, written by the Chidah, one of the greatest of the chronim in the Sephardic land in the past couple hundred years. The Chidah writes here, number four, When Chazal said, these and these are the words of the living God, they're both right, V'havu b'kamoy, and the early Mefarshim wondered about this. How can it be that both opinions are the words of the living God? How can it be that if I say this is usser and you say it's mutter, how can we both be saying the Torah? Either it's usser or it's mutter. How can Hashem agree with both of us? Either it's usser or it's mutter. Whoever the halacha doesn't follow did not speak properly. Right? If the heavenly voice rang out and said the halacha is like Beit Hillel, Hashem agrees with Beit Hillel, that means Beit Hillel was right and Beit Shammai was wrong. So what's the value of both opinions? And he gives one theory here. One theory that I don't know of any source for other than the Chidah. He quotes Amar HaRishonim. The early commentary said, I'm not sure who he's referring to, Diyan that granted, Ein Ha'or Nikr El Mitoch HaChoshech. The light is not recognized except in contrast to darkness. Right? The Mefarshim say, why Hanukkah candles coming up? Why do we light Hanukkah candles at night and not during the day? So if you lit the candles during the day, then you couldn't really see them. You can only see the candles at night because they contrast with the background of darkness. V'ha'emet lo nikar el mitoch ha-sheker. Truth is not recognizable except by contrast with falsehood. Kein ha-davar hazeh, likewise is this. Lo yuvan v'lo yityashev me'atzmuto. You cannot understand and settle the true opinion by itself, el mihipucho, but rather by contrast with its opposite. What he's saying is that his theory's truth is that is monistic. There's only one truth out there, right? The truth out there is whatever the halacha is, whatever Hashem believes up in heaven. Up in heaven, there's a truth. And truth means if you got it right, right? If the halacha is like you, that's the truth. And if the halacha is like you, then you're telling the truth. If the halacha is against you, then you're speaking falsehood. Is it worth learning first falsehood? Can falsehood be called the words of Hashem? So he says, yes. He says it's an intellectual methodology. Anyone here ever learn in Rav Lichtenstein's shir? I remember Rav Lichtenstein's shir. If he wanted to analyze an opinion, he would always start with the opposite opinion. Right? There's a machlopsi and Abaye and Rav in the Gemara, and he wanted to analyze Rav, he would never start with Rav. He would start with Abaye, and he would say, well, Abaye is making two assumptions. For Rav to disagree, he either disagrees with assumption A or disagrees with assumption B, and then we would see how, according to Tosfot, Rav disagreed with assumption A and agreed with assumption B. According to the Rambam, he disagreed with assumption B and agreed with assumption A, and then you would get the whole lundus, as it were, of the conceptual analysis. To really understand something, you have to see what the other possibility is, what the other option is, and what are the advantages and disadvantages of the two sides, and why this is right, and that theory is wrong. And that's definitely true. You know, if I were to say that, and I used to teach in there's a yeshiva, where sometimes guys would try to come up with a lot of chidushim. You know, sometimes the chidushim made sense. Sometimes the chidushim were just putting together jargon in a way that made it sound very nice. How do you tell the difference? So I had a great litmus test. The guy would come over to the chidush, I would say, okay, I hear what you're saying. As opposed to what? Like, what's the other option, and why is your option better? If the guy could tell me, well, you could have said this way or that way, and there are two real possibilities, but I'm saying this possibility because it's better than that other possibility, then he really understands on a deep level what he's saying. If anyone tells you something, they can't tell you, like, what that's the opposite of, what that's as opposed to, then they don't really know what they're talking about. If you don't understand the opposite of what you're saying, and you don't understand what the other option is and why you don't believe it, then you don't know what you're talking about. To really understand what someone's saying, you have to understand what the other people are saying and why they're right and why he's wrong. And therefore, he says, "Lakeinam Hashem l'Moshe." Therefore, Hashem even told Moshe in our Sinai, "Divra mezakin v'mechayvin." The logic of those who say innocent, those who say guilty, kayotze, and etc. Ki mitoch hasvar dechuya, because through understanding the pushed away, the incorrect logic, tibanav tikonin ha'amitit, you can build and establish the true logic. What is the Chidah saying here? Okay, this is the first of his three interpretations. Says the Chidah, quoting Rishonim, he says there's really only one truth. There's one truth. Beit Hillel is the truth. And Beit Shammai is the falsehood. Beit Hillel is right, Beit Shammai is wrong. There's only one true opinion. But it's worth learning both opinions, because if you understand both opinions, then you can understand the true opinion on a deeper level. So for the Chidah, truth is univocal. There's only one possible truth out there. There's only one opinion that's true, and the other opinion is dead wrong, is false. And it doesn't actually mean both opinions are the words of Hashem. Only one opinion is the word of Hashem. The other opinion is incorrect. But intellectually, academically, you have to understand the false opinion if you really want to understand the true opinion. So it's a purely academic methodology. Academic methodology, you have to learn both opinions and contrast them, because then you'll have a deeper understanding of the truth. But philosophically, only one opinion is true. There can't be two truths out there. There can only be one truth out there. That's the first approach that I wanted to explore of the Chidah, quoting these Rishonim. The second approach I want to explore is, number five, is Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein is a fascinating story. I didn't have room to copy the whole story here. In the introduction to the Igrot Moshe, the Igrot Moshe is a book of his Sheilot Tshuvot, his answers to halachic questions. And for many years, he was very world famous, and everyone sent their questions to him, and he answered them. And he always kept a copy of his answers for his records. So he just had files of thousands and thousands of shilas that he had answered. And someone said, why don't you publish them in a book? He said, no, I don't want to publish them in a book. He says, I'm very reluctant to publish them in a book. Because what if I'm wrong? What if I'm wrong? If I'm wrong, I publish them in a book. 1,000 people will buy the Sefer. They'll all do what I said. And when they go up to heaven after their Me'av Esrim, Hashem will say, you know, you're wrong. You actually did Averot. They'll say, I just follow what it said in the Igrot Moshe. I'll say, okay, fine. You're okay. You get a buy. And then when I go up after my 120, Hashem will say, those 1,000 people, I let them go because I put it all on you. Now you're responsible for all these Averot. Said for many years he was reluctant to publish his tshuvot because he was a very humble man. Anyone who knows the stories of his lifetime, he's a very humble man, and he was afraid, what if he was wrong? He said, if someone asks me a question, I answer it. Why? It's a halacha. A rabbi has to answer shilos, right? Unless there's another rabbi better than him who lives next door, but if the rabbi, he's the rabbi, he has to answer shilos. So he had no choice. But I don't have to publish a book, so I'm not going to publish a book. I don't want people to follow me if I'm wrong. And then he changed his mind. He remembered a story in the Gemara. There is a machloket in the Gemara, if anyone remembers, the 19th parak of Masechet Shabbat between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. Rabbi Eliezer holds, we all know that a Brit Milah, you're allowed to cut the Brit Milah on Shabbat. Rabbi Eliezer holds you're even allowed to prepare for the Brit Milah on Shabbat. You can sharpen the knife on Shabbat. You can buy a knife on Shabbat. You can drive the knife on Shabbat. And not only that, you can, you know, cut off your lulav and etrog from the tree on Shabbat. You could build your sukkah on Shabbat. You could tie your tzitzit on Shabbat. He holds anything that's preparing for a mitzvah overrides Shabbat. That's clearly not the halacha, right? We have no one's held that way for 2,000 years. But that's what he held. And he, in his town, people followed him. And there were times when they used to, like, you know, fire up the furnace on Shabbat to, like, smelt iron and make a knife in order to do a Brit Milah, because they didn't have a good knife. And this is all Chilul Shabbat. So what happened to this town? So for all this Chilul Shabbat, so the Gemara says two things. Number one, they all lived long lives. And number two, when the Roman government, the evil Roman government, always says in the Gemara, for good reason, the evil Roman government made a decree against Brit Milah, against circumcision, they exempted this town. So basically, they all got long life and exemption from persecution. Right, so Rav Moshe Feinstein says, but what they did was wrong. It wasn't the halacha. He says, we see from here that apparently, in order to be a tzaddik, in order to be rewarded by Hashem and to be considered righteous, you don't have to get everything right. What do you have to do? Right? Apparently, you have to follow a valid halachic opinion. And what makes an opinion valid? So let's look what he says in number five. And he talks about two kinds of truth. He divides truth into two categories. Ha'emet lehora'ah. Truth, hora'ah means psak, practical purposes. The truth for paskening, the practical truth, kfar nemar lo b'shamayim hi, we already told it's not in the heavens. Meaning, Hashem doesn't expect us to go up to the heavens. Obviously, we can't literally go up to the heavens. He doesn't expect us to know what's going on in heaven. All right, there's a heavenly yeshiva, there are heavenly beings, there's a heavenly truth. We don't have direct access to that. And it's not fair to expect us to. Rather, Ella, what are we supposed to do for psak? What's the practical truth? The truth, practical truth, is what seems to a Talmud Chacham, after he examined properly to clarify the halacha based on the Gemara and the poskim, with all his might, bekovid rosh, with seriousness of a yirum Hashem yitbarach, and with fear of heaven, it seems to the posek that that is the proper halacha. That's true enough, that's true for practical halachic purposes. And he has to paskin that way. Even if truly, it's revealed in heaven, that's the earthly truth. Even if in heaven, even if in heaven they know that he does not have the right pshat, he's interpreting it wrong, even if in heaven he's wrong, that's still good. That's the earthly truth. It's not the heavenly truth, but it's the earthly truth. And that's why it says his words are the words of Hashem. Since it seems to him that the interpretation is what he paskined, and there's no contradiction to him. It fit in the halachic system. It was a judgment. How do you interpret it this way or that way? He thought this way, and he was wrong. Up in heavens, they all knew he was wrong. Nonetheless, that's good enough for practical purposes. That might not be heavenly truth, but it's earthly truth. He'll get rewarded for his psak. People will get rewarded for following his psak. He will be rewarded for giving the psak, even if in truth he's really wrong. So Rav Moshe says, even if in truth I'm really wrong, I trust myself. I'm a humble fellow. But I have enough self-confidence to know that I really learned Torah with all my might and with seriousness and with fear of heaven. And therefore, whether I get it right or wrong in heaven, it's earthly truth. What he's saying is there's two different levels of truth. Up in heaven, this, you know, the 100 years ago, the philosophers argued over two different conceptions of truth philosophically. Okay, if we sit here and discuss how to define truth in the history of Western philosophy, we'll all be frustrated because it's very subtle and no one's exactly sure what anyone else means. But there are two main theories of truth 100 years ago, the correspondence theory and the coherence theory. Correspondence theory means the truth is what really matches reality. It corresponds to reality. Like, there's like a real answer out there, and if you got what matches the reality out there, then that's true. The coherence theory of truth said, no, what's true is what is coherent. If you have a system and it all works together and it fits in with everything else in the system, so that's true. I think what Moshe Feinstein is saying is that they're both right. There's a correspondence theory of truth. Up in heaven, Hashem has an opinion and he knows what's right and what's wrong. That's called be'emet, the truth, the deeper level, be'etzem, inherently, klapei shmaya galya, what's revealed in heaven, is that there's a real truth. Beit Hillel got the real truth, they were right. Beit Shammai did not correspond to the real truth up in heaven, they were wrong. But that's the truth for theoretical purposes, but for practical purposes, emet lehora'ah, what we're supposed to be truly doing in this world is the coherence theory. As long as it's paskened by someone who took into account all the halachic factors, and it's not contradicted by anything in halach, and it works within the system, that's a good enough truth for practical purposes. And what Rav Moshe says is that there is no pluralism theoretically. Theoretically, there's one side is right, one side is wrong. However, there is pluralism practically, because lo b'shamayim hi, Hashem expects us to live an earthly Torah life, not a heavenly Torah life. And in this earth, what did the Torah mean? It doesn't mean what's theoretically right and corresponds to Hashem's intention and what the angels and the students in the Yeshiva Shalmala are learning. In this earth, what's right is that we try the best we can as flesh and blood creatures to do the right thing in this physical existence. Which means we learn Torah as hard as we can, and we follow those who learn Torah as hard as they can, and they come up with the Psak Halacha, and it makes it fits the system, even if it's not really the best interpretation. And therefore, as long as you follow that, that's true for our practical earthly life. We are living truly halachically, even if it's not the theoretically correct halacha. So that is, so far we've seen two opinions. What these two opinions have in common, the Chida, in quoting the Rishonim, he also quotes others, and Rav Moshe Feinstein, is that up in heaven, there's really only one truth. Really, someone's right and someone's wrong. Really, Beit Hillel's right and Beit Shammai's wrong. Rav Moshe Feinstein's right and the Chelkot Yaakov's wrong. You know, Rav Chaim Noah's right and the Chazanish is wrong. Whatever machloket you want to think of, someone's really right, someone's really wrong. I give you my opinion, but that obviously does not always correspond to what goes on in heaven. But there's value to the other opinion as well. What's the difference between the two theories we've seen? The Chida says there's only one kind of truth, a monistic truth. There's a right answer and a wrong answer. The value to the other opinion is just academic. It's useful to study the false opinion to help give you background for the true opinion and to give you contrast to the true opinion. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, no, there's two levels of truth. There's a theoretical heavenly truth where there's right and wrong, there's only one right answer, but then there's an earthly living truly halachically, living truly on the based on the Torah. And as long as we're following a valid opinion, whether right or wrong, we're living truly based on the Torah, and that's all Hashem asks of us. He doesn't ask us to be theoretically right, he asks us to live the right life. And there's can be more than a way to live the right life based on doing the best we can. Okay, now I want to move on to two other approaches. which are perhaps a little bit more philosophically bold and suggest that maybe even theoretically there doesn't have to be only one truth, but in two different ways. Let's look at number six, the Ritva. Eilu ve'eilu jibel kim chayim. These and these are the words of Hashem. Shalu rabbani tsarfat zal. The French rabbis asked. Right? We have some other svarim of the French rabbis, which known as the Bali Tosfot, who where we find them asking this question. But the most well-known source that quotes this these Bali Tosfot is the Ritva. The rabbani tsarfat asked, Heich esher yishu shneim jibel kim chayim. How can it be possible that two opposite opinions are both the words of the living God? Ze oser ze mater. One says oser, one says mater. V'tirtu, they answer. K'ksha'ola Moshe l'marim l'kabal Torah. When Moshe went up to heaven to receive the Torah. Her'ulah kol davar v'davar mem tetpanim l'isur mem tetpanim l'heter. The malachim showed him. On every single matter, he had a question about halachically, 49 arguments that it's oser and 49 arguments that it's mutter. So he went up there to learn Torah in the heavenly yeshiva with the malachim. And they told him, oh, you could say this way, you could say that way. Here's 49 ways you could say oser, 49 ways you could say mutter. So v'shalu l'kadosh baruch hu al zeh. Moshe asked Hashem, he says, I don't know, but what's the answer? Right? It's very nice that you can say this way, you say that way. But what's the truth? Where's the heavenly truth? I came up to heaven. I want to know who's right and who's wrong. I don't want to know who's doing an okay job. I want to know what's the real truth. What's the real answer? V'amar she'ez v'mashal l'chachmei Yisrael shem kol dor v'dor. Hashem said it's up to the Jewish chachamim, the rabbis of each generation, the yeach ra'akamotam, and the psak halacha, the decision will follow them. Okay, the Ritva adds, v'nochel fi adrash, that this is philosophically true, although Kabbalistically he has more secret things that he's not telling us. He didn't tell me either, I don't know what he meant. But he says that, what did the Tosafists say? That even up in heaven, apparently, there isn't one truth. Moshe went up to heaven, not only did he ask the angels in heaven, he even asked Hashem Yisbarach himself. He asked God, what's the truth? And God said, I'm not saying, like, you could say this way, you could say that way, whatever the rabbis paskin. According to this Ritva, it seems to be that even theoretically there's no truth out there. There is no correspondence theory. There is no real heavenly opinion of Hashem that we're trying to correspond to. Hashem has options. Whatever you do is okay with him, right? He doesn't prefer one way or the other. Whatever the Chacham of each generation paskin, that's good enough because there is no real answer. There is no real truth out there. There's only options. As long as you're within the system, coherence theory, as long as it fits within the halachic system, that is good enough. Now this Ritva, if you understand him on the simplest level, which one certainly has the right to do, I admit it's unsatisfying to me. Like the radical pluralism. Like there is no right answer out there. But it's a little funny, if there's no right answer out there, why are people arguing so much? Like, what are we striving for? You know, why traditionally have we been worried about whether we had the right psak halacha or the wrong psak halacha, if any option is okay? And philosophically, and this is a question that is asked by the Chavot Ya'ir in his Tshuvos, he gets into a philosophical digression, and asks, like, how could Hashem not have an opinion? Like, you might not have an opinion about something. I might not have an opinion about something. Because I'm not smart enough to know the answer to all the questions. Like, some things, like, I don't know, it could be either way. How do I know? But Hashem is infinitely smart. Like, shouldn't he know which opinion is better than the other? If there's some difference between them, there are two possible interpretations. Shouldn't he know which interpretation is better? Like, even if you can interpret the Gemara two ways, shouldn't he know which is spiritually better, which is more constructive spiritually, which leads to the best effects? It's a little peculiar to me. I'm a little reluctant to acknowledge that the Ritva means what he seems to mean on the surface. And therefore, I might come back to this Ritva when we see our fourth theory. Let's review our three theories. First theory of the Chidah, there's only one truth out there in heaven, and even down on earth there's only one truth. It's just useful to learn both opinions because it's academically valuable. Rav Moshe Feinstein, up in heaven there's only one truth. Down here there are two truths, because down here as long as you're working within the system and you're trying to serve Hashem and be a good Jew, that's good enough. And the Ritva, even up in heaven, there isn't a real truth. There's no right answer out there. It's just whatever you want. It's just choice, just options. I think, however, that what's missing from perhaps all of these opinions, not that I'm here to criticize any of these opinions, but perhaps what one can add is that all these opinions are assuming that truth is usser or mutter. Then they argue, is it really usser? Is it really mutter? Is it really, we don't know if it's usser or mutter, right? These opinions are still somewhat black and white. It's either usser or mutter. I think Rashi gives us a clue to a different way of looking at the relationship between truths, a different way of looking at the nature of truth, which might, I think, I hope, by the end of this 8:30, when I plan to finish, which might enlighten us as to how the whole halachic process is supposed to work. Let's look at this Rashi number 7. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's a Rashi on a tangent in the Gemara. But Rashi is contrasting arguing about facts to arguing about halachot, to arguing about law. When you argue about facts, like sometimes the fact is either one way or the other way. Like if I say, it was 8 o'clock when the car crash happened, and you say it was 9 o'clock, one of us is right, one of us is wrong. But what do we argue about law, about halacha? I say the halacha is usher, you say the halacha is mutter. So says Rashi, look at the underline in 7, Aval ki pligi tre amorai bedin, when two amorayim argue about civil law, obe eser v'heter, or about ritual law, usher and mutter. Kolchad amar hachim estaber taima, each one says this reasoning makes sense. Ein kan sheker, no one's lying. Kolchad v'chad svaridi dekamer, each one is saying their logic. Let's think about it. I say I have logical reasons why I think it should be usher. You say you have logical reasons you think it should be mutter. Truth is, I really do have logical reasons. And you really do have logical reasons. So what does that mean? Mar yav taima le'atera, one gives reasons why it's mutter. Or mar yav taima le'isura, one gives reasons why it's usher. Mar medami milta le'milta hachi, one compares one matter to another matter thus. Umar medami le'binyan achrina, one compares in a different way. How does halacha work? How does the halachic system deal with new cases? We compare them, right? There's a new case that's not found in the thousands of years of halachic tradition, so we compare it. I say, it's like this other case which is usher, so it's usher. You say it's like that other case that's mutter, so it's mutter. Okay, what's the real truth? If I can logically claim it's like this precedent that's forbidden, you can logically claim it's like this precedent that's permitted. We're both making logical arguments, so what is it really? So, let's see. V'ikalamemer, you can say, they're both the words of the living God. Zimnan shai chai taima, sometimes one reason will apply. Zimnan shai chai taima, sometimes another reason will apply. Rashi says, maybe it's in the middle. Sometimes it's usher, sometimes it's mutter. Why? Shatam et hapich, the reasoning changes. Lefishinoi hadvarim, vishinoi mu'at, in accordance with subtle shifts, mu'at, in circumstances. It says, maybe the answer is somewhere in between. Like, if I have good reasons for saying it's usher, and you have totally illogical reasons for saying it's mutter, then I'm right and you're wrong. But that's not halachic discourse. People are not saying completely illogical things. I have my point and you have a point. So what happens if I have a point and you have a point? Maybe the answer is somewhere in between. It's like sometimes usher and sometimes mutter, dependent on the circumstances. This idea, what Rashi's telling us here is that the two opinions don't have to be mutually exclusive options. We basically started by saying, right, we framed the question. In Agada, in stories, in Pilagish Begiva, the story could have both elements. But in Halach, it's either usher or mutter. So what's the answer? What is the truth up in heaven? Is the truth usher, is the truth mutter, or is the truth no opinion? Maybe there's another option. Maybe the truth is neither usher nor mutter, but in between, but some combination. And this idea, and I hope to be able to prove to you that this is the pashut pshat, not just of this particular philosophical sugya, but of life, is most famously developed. Maybe not most famously, should be most famously developed, but I think most thoroughly developed by the Maharal, if we flip the page, in his Sefer Be'ergola. The Maharal, Miprag, okay, we will not get into the debate nowadays, right now as to whether or not he made a golem in Prague, but one thing that is very clear is that he was one of the greatest Jewish philosophers of the last 500 years and maybe ever. He here deals with, in this beginning, the Sefer Be'er Hagola, Makor number 8, with the nature of truth and machloket. And he says, V'amar balei asupot, this is a commentary on Makor 2, the Gemara in Chagiga. Why are they called masters of gatherings? Perish, ki efshar sheyadat chacham al derech echad. Here's the interesting. It's impossible that all rabbis, all chachamim, would agree, would be think the same way. Why is it impossible they all think the same way? Here's an interesting question. Why is there machloket? Why do people argue about things? Right? Is machloket b'dievet or l'chadchila? Right? Is it just because we're not smart enough to figure out the truth so we argue? Or are we supposed to be arguing about things? Are people supposed to agree on the truth or are they supposed to disagree? What's the ideal? Says the Maharal, it's impossible that everyone think the same way. Why? The efshar shelo yechilek b'neim, it's impossible there not be differences between them. Kefi ma shehem mechulakim b'sechlam, in accordance with how their minds are different. Now, whose fault is it that people's minds are different? Hashem's, right? He made us that way. Chazal say, just like Kishem Shepar Tzufayim, etc., just like he made our faces different, he made our minds different. I mean, it's not that l'chathchila God intended to use a cookie cutter, and that we should all be the same, and then we messed up and everyone did averus, which made them slightly different, and made them think in a different warped way. No, when Hashem created people, just like he created people to look different from one another, he created people to think different from one another. We all have our own way of thinking, right? We have our own DNA, we have our own upbringing, we have our own baggage, we have our own perspective, our time and place. And it's not like unfortunate that we all think differently. God intended us to think differently. And therefore, God intended people to argue about Torah and to have different opinions. Why? Ki kol davar v'davar, says the Maharal, i'efshar shlo yeh b'chini yoter me'echad l'achad l'davar echad. This is the key. Everything in the world, it's impossible there not be more than one aspect. Bechina means aspect. It's used a lot in Chassidut also, in the sense of aspect, to one a matter. Meaning, or in even simpler language, there are two sides to every issue. There's more than one side to every issue. Like, not everything has to be usur or mutter, right? I mean, think about it. Let's say people. You're judging a person. Not a real person. Oh, it'd be very nice. A character in a book. You get an assignment back in school. You know, write about this character in the book. Is this a good character or an evil character? Is this person good or evil? What's the answer going to be? I mean, for any decent books. The answer is going to be, well, there's two sides to the character, right? It's complex. It's a complicated world out there. Like, everything has different sides to it, different perspectives. It doesn't mean, like, people mistakenly think different things. Like, authentically, honestly, the truth is that things in the world are complex. We don't live in a world of black and white. We live in a world of complexity where there's two sides to every issue. And therefore, says, explained by Ral, Sha'afma davar tameh, i'efshar shlo yeh tzad b'china shel tara shel ma. V'chein ma davar tahor, i'efshar shlo yeh b'china ma shel tuma. Even if something is tameh, it's impure, it's impossible. It must have some aspect, some good side to it of purity. And even if something's pure, in this world, things are complex. Nothing's perfect. Nothing's perfectly bad. Nothing's perfectly good. Nothing's perfectly tameh or tahor or asur or mutter. There must be another side to the issue. That's the chiddush. We thought that the halacha tells us everything fits into one of two boxes. Saying no, there's more than one side to the issue. Ubnei Adam mechulakim b'seichel. People have different brains. The efshes you call sichel b'nei Adam al derech echad kamoshi v'ayir. It's impossible that all people think the same way, as I'll explain. V'lakach kol echad ve'echad mekabel b'china achat. Everyone receives, understands one side of the issue. Kefi chelek sichlo, in accordance with the nature of their brain. Meaning, let's think about an interesting question. Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Is there a pattern to how they paskind? Anyone know? Beit Hillel was always Mekel, right? And Beit Shammai was always Machmir. Why is that? Is that because Beit Hillel had a political agenda to be Mekel, and Beit Shammai had a political agenda to be Machmir? No. No one had their opinion in Torah because of a political agenda. However, they had a philosophical orientation. It's not coincidence that Beit Hillel was always Mekel and Beit Shammai was always Machmir, but it wasn't Beit Hillel didn't get jobs because he was Mekel and Beit Shammai didn't get jobs because they were Machmir. What? Beit Hillel had different brains than Beit Shammai. Right? God created different people. There are optimists and pessimists. So there are halachic optimists and halachic pessimists. Beit Hillel always saw what was good about every situation. Beit Shammai always saw what was bad about every situation. So you ask them a shayla, Beit Hillel would see what was okay about it. They would see the side of permissibility, that aspect. And Beit Shammai would see the side of that was problematic, the side of prohibition. And who's right? The answer is they're each seeing one side of the truth. They're each seeing one facet of the truth. Like, you ask an optimist and a pessimist, and they give you two different opinions, right? Should I go to Tel Aviv today? The pessimist will start telling you about the rain and the traffic, etc., and the optimist will, who's right? Assuming they're both logical people, intelligent, educated people, they're both right. They're chesronot v'yitronot, as we say, right? There are advantages and disadvantages to everything. So they're both right. They're just seeing two sides of the issue. I know someone who always, whenever you ask him about any person, he always sees the bad side of them. He always tells you everything that's wrong with them. And he's right. I know someone else who always sees the good side of everyone. For one guy, everyone's always evil. Not evil, but everyone's always no good. For another, everyone's always a tzaddik. Who's right? The answer is they're both right. They're both right. Everyone has two sides to them. Why do some people only see one side, some people see the other side? Obviously, in judging people, we should always strive to err on the side of seeing the good. But intellectually, philosophically, right, they're both right, because there's two sides to every issue. And you know what? It's very nice to say, why don't you see all the sides of the issue and come to a complete conclusion and understand everything perfectly? The answer is we're human beings. We can't understand anything perfectly. We can only understand partially. So Hashem gave each of us a different brain, and we each see a different part of the picture. How do you get the real truth then? How would you get the real truth? I don't know. Go back to my mashal, the optimist and pessimist. Say I'm a businessman. I want to put together a team of people to decide whether a certain business venture is worth going into or not. What would I do? Well, get a bunch of optimists, get a bunch of pessimists, get some economists, some psychologists, etc. They'll each see one side of the issue, and they'll argue with each other, and they'll never agree. But if I put them all around the table, and they produce a report, and everyone gives their own perspective, then eventually I'll get the whole truth. Because no human being can ever see the whole truth. The truth is too complicated. There's too many sides to every issue. We can't understand everything perfectly. We can only understand things partially. Any human truth can only be partial. We can only see one side of the truth. But if you put everyone together, eventually, you don't have to get a consensus. You get a disagreement. You get a machloket. But if you look at that report they produced with the machloket, you see all the sides of the issue, and eventually you come close to knowing the real truth. And that's exactly what Maharal said. Halacha works. Think about it. Hashem knew that there's a very complex world out there. So what was he going to do? Well, he gave us a Torah that's very, very oversimplified, has a black and white yes or no answer to everything in this complex world. That wouldn't be true, because how can the Torah have simple answers to a complex world? The Torah has to deal with the truth of the world. Truth is the world is very complex. Ah, okay, so he gave us a Torah which had very complex answers to everything in the world, which saw all the in-betweens, saw all the different sides of every issue. Okay, but how is someone supposed to learn Torah and see those sides? You can't see all the sides of the issue. So Hashem had a brilliant plan. He said, I'll give the Torah and give it to interpretation of human beings. And every human being has a different brain and a different upbringing, a different perspective, and comes from a different time and a different place. And then everyone will see their side of the issue. And they'll argue about it. And, you know, maybe one guy was just push it wrong. So they'll argue about it and prove he was wrong, and he'll retract. You know? But if they argue about it, they'll weed out the silly, illogical opinions. You'll be left with the firmly, logically based opinions. But there's still different perspectives. And they're both right. And then the next generation or two or three generations will come and say, ah, now that we see all these perspectives, we can understand the real truth. Because by putting them all together, we get the real truth. There's a mashal that's used for this in medieval literature, both Jewish and non-Jewish. Right, the four blind men argue about something that they surprisingly found in their chatzer, in their front, in the yard. Right, one of them said, right, they can't see, so they try to feel it. One of them said, it's like a forest of tree trunks. The other one said, it's like this big wall. The other one said, what are you talking about? It's this fire hose kind of thing. The other one says, no, it's like a jump rope. So, if they were foolish blind men, they would argue and beat each other up over who was right, who was wrong, and end up being miserable. But if they're sophisticated blind men, what would they realize? There's an elephant in the yard. I don't know how the elephant got in the yard. But there's an elephant in the yard. His legs are as big as and thick as tree trunks. And his body is as wide as a building. And the front, he has a trunk like a fire hose. And the back, he has a tail like a jump rope. And they're all right. If they each think they have the whole truth, then they're all stupid. It's not just a tree trunk. But if they each realize that everyone sees part of the truth, and you get real truth from putting everyone together, then they'll actually eventually get to the real truth. He says that's what the halachic process is intended to do. Because everyone sees part of the truth. Not because there are options in the truth. Because everyone doesn't have an option of the whole truth. I don't have a whole truth, you don't have a whole truth. I don't have a whole correct truth, you don't have a whole incorrect truth. I have part of the truth and you have part of the truth. Doesn't mean everyone's part is equal, right? There are some things that are like mamish, exactly in between usser and mutter. Some things are more one way, some things are more the other way. But everyone has part of the truth. And that's exactly what he explains. Let's read a little more Maharal, even though we don't have time to read the whole thing. He says, Ve'al zekram bali asupot. That's why he called them masters of gatherings. Ritzonu lomar, he means to say, She'yoshvin asupos ve'oskim atorah. They sit in gatherings and learn Torah. She'afshim v'chulakim b'siklam. Even though they have different brains, mikol mokom v'atzvin yachad, they then get together. Right, Chazal tell us, the famous Gemara in Sanhedrin, darshing the pasuk et vahev b'sufa, vahev like ahava, sufa like sof, and it says, alkein yomer b'sefer milchamot Hashem et vahev b'sufa. Milchamot, darshan of love and end, means, talmidei chachamim, who argue with each other in halacha, they just argue while they're learning. In the end, they get together with love and friendship. Right, if they argue and then get together and gather all the opinions, and don't turn into different sects and factions that hate each other, but put together their Torah knowledge, then, when they get together, you have all the different opinions, all the different aspects of the issue. The Amar Shemar Tomer Imkein Heichani Lo Mitomer Yata, and Chazal said, lest you say, how can I learn Torah? Alze Amar Kulam the Numer Reachad Kelachad Netanan Parnesachad Amran Pia Don Kol Masim Ubiur Zeh. The explanation of this line from the Gemara in Makor 2: Ki Hashem Itbarach Asher Natan Torah Yisrael Natan Kadaver V'Tavar V'Torah Kfi Mashehu. When Hashem gave the Torah, he gave the Torah to address everything in accordance with what it really is. If there's a complex case, he gave the Torah to have a complex answer about it. He had to give the Torah with truth. And the truth is, the world is complex. He had to say, this case, there's an aspect of innocence, an aspect of guilt. And this case of Isser Veheter, there's an aspect of permissibility, an aspect of prohibition. Okay, we get his gist. He's saying, says the Naral, a new pshat. Because none of us actually have a full truth. If we think we have a full truth, we're mistaken. Each of us only have part of the truth. Now, of course, we have to fight for our part of the truth. Everyone has to fight for their opinion. Otherwise, you never get to truth in the end, if everyone doesn't fight for their opinion. But in the back of our minds, we know we're limited by our perspective. We're limited by the DNA, by the brain Hashem gave us. We only see one aspect of the truth. The real truth is made by putting together all the other aspects. And ultimately, if there's some new halachic issue and people argue about it, they're both right. Not because both they're two options. Because the real truth is in between. It's complex. It's a combination. They're each seeing one side of the issue. It's the elephant. And therefore, only by putting together all the opinions can we find the actual truth. This idea is, I think, very important for a number of reasons. Number one, and I do want to end on time, so you can go home and look at number 9, the Kli Yakar. The Kli Yakar explains that this is the nature of halachic flexibility. How come sometimes, you know, we're a little more machmer in halacha, sometimes we're a little more makel based on the circumstances? Is it just that, like, we don't know what's right and we're, like, hedging our bets and guessing? Says the Kli Yakar, no. Matters are complex. There might be a case where the actual halachic answer is that there are two sides to the issue. It's somewhat permissible, but somewhat prohibited. And therefore, it's best to stay away from it. But if necessary, if you're really stuck in an emergency, you can be makel, because it's not all bad. There's a good aspect to it as well. And I think what he's saying is this is a different way of looking at the history of halacha. You open up a Shulchan Aruch and start learning halacha, and what do you see? And I think the reason why I'm very attracted to this respect of Maharal is that it just gives me a different way of looking at the history of halacha for the past thousands of years. You open up a Shulchan Aruch, what do you see? Say, well, the Gemara says things about machlokas, how to interpret the Gemara. And then what happened? So sometimes the Shulchan Aruch will say, well, some places their minhag is this way, some places the minhag is that way. Or it'll say, well, really you can be makel, but it's better, machmer tola bracha, it's better to be machmer if you can. Or really you should be machmer, but if it's a shadad chak, you're stuck, if it's a difficult situation, you can be makel. All these types of compromises. Where did all this come from? How do you view the process of halacha? There was like a machloket, we didn't know what to do, and we ended up in all kinds of funny compromises. So one way of looking at it, here's what we call bidyeved, is that, well, really, there's a truth out there. However, we weren't smart enough to figure out the truth, so there were different opinions. And then they got together and we hedged our bets and made all kinds of compromises. So the Maharal says, no, that's not what happened. Really, this process of l'chachila, this is the way it was supposed to work. Really, the reason why we have all these funny compromises and complex halachic decisions is because that reflects the complexity of the world. Really, if there was a machloket about this, it's because it was really complex. There were really two sides to the issue. There wouldn't have been a machlokas if there weren't two sides to the issue. So really, it has a good side and has a bad side to it. So what happens? For a few hundred years, they duke it out, try to weed out all the illogical interpretations and only leave the ones that really stand the test of time. And then we see how many sides are there to the issue. And then eventually comes the Shulchan Aruch or the later postim and says, well, we look at this. If there's like a lot of people who say it's mutar, and then like some sizable minority of machmirim, then we'll see that it's mostly good, but you know, there is a negative aspect to it as well. So we'll say it's mutar, but if you want midat chasidut, you better to avoid it. You know, if we see it's like a little more in between, you know, the different shades of in between, that, you know, there's a lot of permissibility, but there's also a decent side, an equal side perhaps, of prohibition, then we'll say, well, you shouldn't do it. But after all, there is another side to the issue. It is in between. It's complex. So don't do it. But if you're stuck, if it's a hefzed, you're going to lose money. If you're going to be stuck, if it's shalom bayit, etc., then you can be makel. And sometimes the answer will be, you know what? This is a very, like Rashi says, it's a very complex case. It depends on the circumstances. Sometimes the answer will be, well, in one town, they're machmer, in another town, they're makel. In one community, they're machmer, in another community, they're makel. Why? Because this is really complex. And therefore, it depends on your circumstance. In this, you know, there's some good things about this, and there's some bad things. So in this community, it makes sense for them to be makel. Because them, they can really relate, take advantage of the facet of permissibility. And in this community, in this time and place, it might make sense to be machmer. I think that's what the Ritva meant. What did the Ritva mean when Hashem says there are two ways to argue? And in every door, in every generation, the poskim will decide. I don't think he meant God has no opinion. I think he meant Hashem has a complex opinion. He says, look, this is a very complicated issue. There's many sides to the issue. And you know what? I can't say it's totally usher. Because there's two sides to the issue. And in some generations, they need to be makel. They can't live with this prohibition. I can't say it's totally mutter. Because it's not ideal. There's a negative side to this as well. And in some generations, they can really avoid this with minimum inconvenience. And it's better to not get involved in this complexity for no reason. And therefore, I'll leave it up to the poskim of each generation. In the generations where they need to be makel, they'll be makel. In the generations where they need to be machmir, they'll be machmir. Because in every generation, the facet that shines for that generation, the side of the issue that makes sense to that generation, is probably the answer they need. And if you see, like in a certain time and place, they're makel on something, because they're really stuck, it would be hard to be machmir. Then maybe what they're doing, and in another time and place, they're machmir. Maybe that's exactly what Hashem meant. This is a very complex issue, two sides to the issue. Sometimes you have to be makel, sometimes you have to be machmir, like Rashi says, depending on shifts and circumstances. Sometimes you're makel, sometimes you're machmir. So this is a new approach to understanding truth. It's also, you know, the reason I'm attracted to it is not only because it gives a good explanation for the whole history of halacha, but because he's right, like the world really is complex. There are two sides to every issue. You know, the downside is that I have to stop thinking that I personally have all the truth, right? I have to realize that I, as a human being, can never have all the truth. I can only have some of the truth, and I'll fight and intellectually fight and argue from my perspective on truth. But in the end, I'll have to realize that in the end, it's just my perspective. And that my perspective is only part of the story, and your perspective is also part of the story. And the real truth can only come together when we all gather together in this endeavor called Torah study. The Aruch HaShulchan says something very beautiful about this. Maybe I'll end with the Aruch HaShulchan says, number 10, V'chol machloket tanan v'amoraim. In the introduction to the Aruch HaShulchan, if you know one of the differences between the way the Aruch HaShulchan wrote his Sefer Halacha and the Mishnah Berurah wrote their Sefer Halacha, they both go in order of Shulchan Aruch and try to summarize all the poskim up to the beginning of the 20th century when they lived. The Mishnah Berurah started with the Shulchan Aruch and just tried to like give interpretations and say how we paskin. The Aruch HaShulchan started with the Gemara, said there are different ways of looking at it, there's a machloket about this, and went through the whole history of Halacha. He says, why did I do this? Because it's important to know all the different opinions. Why didn't I just tell you what to do? So he explains, number 10, V'chol machloket tanam v'amoraim, all the arguments between tanam and amoraim, v'ga'onim, v'poskim, v'emes, and any generations from the time of the Gemara till now, in truth, l'meivin davar l'ashur, someone who understands things properly, jivar l'kem chayim hema, are all the words of Hashem, l'kulin yesh panim ba'alacha. Panim is really a facet, it's an aspect, a side. They all have a side, they're all telling you a true side of the issue. V'adraba, zoti teferet Torah teno k'dusha v'torah. In fact, this is the glory of our holy and pure Torah. V'chol Torah kula nekret shira. Chazal darshin v'atakit v'ulachem tashira hazot in parshat Vayelech means write the Torah. The Torah is referred to as a song. What makes the Torah a song? Says the Aruch HaShulchan, tiferet hashir hu k'shekolot mishunot zo mizo. What's a song? If you're making a protest and you're chanting, right? I don't know, whatever you want to be chanting, right? Lower the price of cottage cheese. Occupy Wall Street. Whatever it is you're chanting. Then you have to chant in unison in order for people to understand what you're saying. Right? If you're not saying the exact same word at the same time, no one's going to understand your chant. How about when you are making music, when there's a choir? Is the choir all supposed to say the exact same note at the same time? No, the choir is supposed to harmonize, right? It would be a very pathetic choir if they all made the exact same, sang the same note at the same time. It says, "Kasholot kolot mishunot zamazeh." The beauty of a choir is when they harmonize by singing differently, but they come together and make something more beautiful than any of them could have sung on their own. The beauty of an orchestra is when they play different sounds, but it comes together to make music more beautiful than any one person can play on his instrument. V'zeri karni imut, and that's the sweetness. Someone who swims in the sea of Talmud will see the sweetness, all the different types of sweetness of these different opinions. What he's saying is that Torah is like a choir, like an orchestra. We harmonize. Everyone's not. If everyone's singing the same thing, you wouldn't get beautiful music. Everyone's supposed to sing different things. We each have our own part to sing. Every opinion has their part of the choir. When it all comes together, it makes something more beautiful than any individual could. And that's exactly, I think that, you know, when I think about different opinions, the fact that not everyone agrees with me, that there are very different opinions out there, some of which I'm more comfortable with, some of which I'm less comfortable with. My temptation, my natural reaction is, you know, I'm right, I have all the truth, and no one else does. But that's not true. That's not how Torah can work. Then I'm denying the beauty of Torah. The beauty of Torah is that there are different people, each with their own truths. It doesn't mean all the truths are equal. In a choir, some people are supposed to be louder than others. Some parts are more important than others. But everyone has a little piece of the truth, and only if you put that whole Klal Yisrael, all those little pieces of the truth together, do you get the beautiful music of Torah, and I think we can only appreciate the importance of each type of Jew, each segment of Klal Yisrael, each opinion of Torah, if we recognize that we each of us only has access to part of the truth, and that really the way Hashem gave the Torah is He assigned each of us a part. When we put all our parts together, we get the real truth, and that's why Elu ve'Elu are Divrei Elokim Chaim. Thank you very much, everyone, for coming out tonight in the rain, for participating, for learning with me, and it's been a great pleasure, and I hope we'll get to do it again someday. And thank you, Eliana, for organizing it.